Your Bibles to Numbers, the book of Numbers. Book of Numbers, chapter 21. Actually, chapter 22. Sorry, Mandy. Chapter 22, please. Verses 21 to 34. Numbers 22. Balaam got up in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the Moabite officials. But God was very angry when he went. And the angel of the Lord stood in the road to oppose him. Balaam was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand, it turned off the road into a field. And Balaam beat it to get it back on the road. And the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path through the vineyards with walls on both sides. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, it pressed close to the wall, crushing Balaam's foot against it. So he beat the donkey again. And then the angel of the Lord moved on ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no room to turn, either to the right or to the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, it lay down under Balaam, and he was angry and beat it with his staff. And then the Lord opened the donkey's mouth, and it said to Balaam, "What have I done to you to make you beat me these three times?" Balaam answered the donkey, "You have made a fool out of me. If only I had a sword in my hand, I would kill you right now." The donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your own donkey, which you have always ridden to this day? Have I been in the habit of doing this to you?" "No," he said. And then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with his sword drawn. And so he bowed low and fell face down. And the angel of the Lord said to him, "Why have you beaten your donkey these three times? I have come here to oppose you because your path is reckless, is a reckless one before me. The donkey saw me and turned away from me these three times. If it had not turned away, I would have certainly have killed you by now. But I would have spared it." And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, "I have sinned. I did not realize you were standing in the road to oppose me. Now, if you are displeased, I will go back." That's as far as we'll read today. I love this story. I really do. I love this story. It's because it's got a really cool element in it, doesn't it? The story of Balaam is sort of like the story of Jonah, in that Jonah was swallowed up by a whale. But here we have a talking animal. Now, where else do we see talking animals? Mandy, could you show this thing for me, please? So, of course, you would recognize a few of these characters, I would assume. There's, you know, Bugs Bunny and Mr. Ed, for those of you who are not so young. It's still in black and white, by the way. I don't even know if Mr. Ed came out in color at all, did it? We don't know. Yeah, I'm looking at a choice few people. Thank you, Mandy. We have a talking donkey in this story, and that draws our attention to the power of the Lord and how it was a unique time for Balaam the prophet. In order to get an idea of the situation with Balaam, we should just go back, though, just a little bit. You see, the Israelites were advancing through the land, and they were taking on nation after nation after nation. And they had already just beaten the Amorites. But Balak, he was the king of Moab, he stood there looking at the edge of where the Amorites used to be, and there's the camp of the Israelites, and they are a force to be reckoned with. And so Balak, he says to his people, he says, we need somebody on our side. Because there's no way we can fight these guys. And so he says, I know Balaam. He's a prophet, he's a seer, he's a medium, and he knows the God of the Israelites. We'll get him. We'll get him to tell the God of the Israelites to not allow the Israelites to pass. We'll proclaim oracles. You can tell God what to do. And so Balak sends a delegation out to Balaam and says, hey, you want to come and help us out? And so Balaam says, no, I got to inquire of God first. And so he goes and he inquires of God. He comes back. He says, you know what? Not for all the money in the kingdom. Not even if you gave me Balak's own palace. I can't do this. And so the delegation went back to Balak. And Balak's going, what are you doing here without Balaam? And they said, listen, he's not coming unless we give him everything. And Balak's saying, well, there's no plan B here. We are all going to die if you don't get this guy. And so they go back and they offer him. They say, you have a blank check, my friend. You have a blank check. You name your price. And Balaam says, he says, I have to go to the Lord, to Yahweh. I have to inquire of him. In which he does. He goes and inquires of God. And God says to him, go. You may go. And see, somewhere along the lines, though, Balaam's idea of doing God's will and the idea of gaining a whole lot of wealth sort of get jumbled up there. He thinks he's got his cake and can eat it too, you see, because he's not only got God's blessing that he's going to go to Balak and proclaim oracles, but he also has this idea that he can get very rich while doing it. And that must be God's will too. And so he's thinking up these things. And so the next morning he's saddling up his donkey, right? He's getting ready to go. He's got a smile on his face from ear to ear. He's got an appointment with Balak today. He's on his way. He's got his servants with him. It's all going to happen. He thought he had the world by the tail, and that he's going to be very very wealthy. We get a hint of this. It doesn't say that in this text, but we get a hint of that in 2 Peter 2, where Peter's talking about greedy people, and where Peter's talking about that they have left the straight way and wandered off to follow the way of Balaam, who loved the wages of wickedness. The wages of wickedness. You see, Balaam's going to the enemy of Israel. He's going on God's behalf with the intent of becoming very wealthy. God didn't like that. God was angry about that. And so he sent the angel with a flashing sword to stand in front. Sort of like the angel with a flashing sword who stood guard at the gate to the Garden of Eden. That type of angel. Same scenario. And the angel blocked the pathway. But the pathway was surrounded by fields, so it wasn't that hard to get around. And yet Balaam's beaten on his donkey. A she-donkey, by the way. It's a she-donkey. Not that that means anything in this story, really, but it's a she-donkey. And the first time around, there's lots of land around so he can make it across, no problem. The second time, not so much, because the path is narrowed. It's between two vineyards. It's in a vineyard area, and there's two walls on either side, and the pathway's a little bit wider, but not too wide. And the angel's standing there, and the donkey sees the angel, and he's got to get or she's got to get around if she wants to keep going, because Balaam's on her back pressing her along. And so she does the best she could. She scooches along the wall a little bit, along the one wall. Now, of course, Balaam's screaming at this point, because if you've ever had a donkey or an animal like that size, crunching your leg up against a wall, yeah, that would hurt. I could see that. But then the angel goes on a little bit further. And he stands in a place where there's no spot to pass. It's a single lane. There's no other option. And Balaam's still pressing this donkey forward. Come on, donkey. I got an appointment I got to be at. But the donkey sees no other way out and stops and lays down under Balaam. Now, Balaam gets off the donkey, limps around a bit because he's got a sore leg, and starts wailing on the donkey with his staff. And then God made the donkey speak, allowed the donkey to speak. What have I done to make you so angry? What have I done? I've done nothing wrong. In fact, the donkey's probably thinking, I've done everything right. Balaam's response, you've made a fool out of me. I got an appointment I got to be at. I got the king's delegation with me. You're going all over the place. You're not obeying me. You're not listening to me. I got to get there, and you're holding me up. If I had a sword in my hand, I'm so mad that if I had a sword in my hand, I would kill you right now, right where you lay. Now, you may find it funny that Balaam's actually talking to his donkey. It doesn't seem like he's even fazed by it. And the donkey's reply is this: haven't I been good to you? Haven't I been a faithful servant to you all this time? You know, it's within my character that I've never would steer you wrong like this before. In fact, have I ever steered you wrong? And Balaam's answer is, no, you haven't. You see, Balaam wasn't looking for God's greater purpose here so much as he was in a rush to get to where the money was. Of course, he had his blinders on. He wasn't allowed to see the donkey either. But she saw the danger all right, and she slowed Balaam down, even to a stop. And Balaam couldn't see it until the Lord opened his eyes up, or her eyes, or his eyes up, so that he could see the angel. And with that, Balaam knew that he'd done wrong. And the angel said to him, he says, I would have killed you, and I would have spared the donkey if she didn't stop. Now, that's quite a statement. Have you ever been that angry? Today's sin of our seven deadly sin trek through Lent is the sin of wrath. And the wrath is anger. Anger. Have you ever been angry enough? Angry enough to kill? Angry enough to sever relationships with loved ones? Have you ever been angry enough to alienate people? Like everyone in your family, everyone of your friends, have you ever been that angry so that all you have left is your anger? Are we actually like that? Like, we get together all the time. We'll get together downstairs later on, we'll have coffee, we'll chit-chat, we'll smile, all this kind of stuff. Are we that angry? You see, the one thing that we need to remember about all these deadly sins is that they are all attitudes. They're attitudes. Attitudes that we gain as a result of sin. And these attitudes, they cause us to do stuff if we don't check them. If we're not on top of them. We do things that we might not do in a normal state of mind. And we touched on this a little bit last week when we were talking, we touched on it the week before too, but we touched on this last week when we were talking about Cain and Abel. Cain was angry. So much so that he envied his brother so much. And the envy that riled up within him was enough for him to kill his brother Abel. We can also take another look, a look at King Saul and David. King Saul's the king of Israel at this point. David's just a young guy coming up in the ranks. David and Saul are pretty close. David comes back from battle. And the people are raising up their hands and they're going, "This David, look at him. He's killed his tens of thousands. Saul's killed his thousands, but David's killed his tens of thousands." And they're cheering on David. And Saul gets in his mind right away. What's going on here? You can read it for yourself in 1 Samuel 18. He says, "What more can David get but the kingdom?" You see? And from that time on, the text says there, Saul kept a close eye on David. "I'm keeping an eye on you, buddy." And later on, we find out that soon a spear comes flying at David at the hand of Saul. And later on, we find out as well that David's on the run from Saul, hiding out in caves in the wilderness, not seeking revenge, but just hiding out, trying to steer himself away from the wrath of Saul. You see, anger transforms us into someone else. It's the attitude we get. We are wronged by someone, or at least it looks like that to us. And we get this sense that if we don't do something about it right now, right away, we're going to explode. We may not see the greater picture. And, you know, I like to think of the story of Balaam's donkey as the first recorded incident of road rage, because I think it is. Balaam needed to get somewhere. He needed to do something that was of major importance to him, and he was being blocked, or at least slowed down, by this idiot animal that he's riding on top of. How many times have you had something like this happen? You're in a hurry to get somewhere. You got something to do. Your day is going fine until blank. You know, someone, maybe you're in a hurry to get to an appointment, like Balaam was. And you go to your car to start the car. You're all ready to go. You get into the car and can't start. Battery's dead. Battery's dead because someone left the lights on overnight. Not cool. Or maybe you're going up Highway 86 and there's traffic coming the other way and a piece of farm equipment is in front of you and it's going rather slow. I know farm equipment doesn't necessarily go that slow anymore, but you know, say it's a combine. Combines are pretty wide and you can't get by this thing. And you're going, "Come on. Come on, like, can't you just," and you're waiting for that next concession where you're hoping that the combine's going to turn down on. And he doesn't turn down on that concession. See, he's in no hurry, but he's holding you up. How do you react? Or your day is going fine until blank. You know, you get a call for an emergency somewhere. Or you get I get this all the time. Okay? I get this all the time. I have a plan for my day. Say I have a council meeting. We're a council's meeting on Wednesday night. I got a council meeting that night. And then in the afternoon, I got visits lined up with a couple of people. So that gives me the morning to do some administrative work or maybe just to get my sermon off the ground, right? And then the phone rings. And then an email comes in. And then somebody walks in the door, wants to talk to me. And all these things are okay. Don't get me wrong. All these things are okay. The phone calls are okay. The emails are okay. And the people walking through the door are more than welcome. But I've learned not to get upset about it. Just to go, okay, this is the way it is. This is the way it is. See, the key is in how you handle it. Because your attitudes towards things that mess up changes everything. Changes everything. The first thing you need to realize is that it's not about you, folks. Sorry. It's not about you. The world does not revolve around you. Even though the world is telling you these days that the world is revolving around you, the world doesn't revolve around you. You see, our anger is often about how we have been wronged, how we've been inconvenienced. It rarely takes into account God's viewpoint. That he is in control and that we are subject to him and that we can leave things with him. That we are his servants. That we are on his plan. If we only saw this in everything that we do, we might not be so angry. Not that it's always a sin to be angry either. We can be righteously angry. Jesus was righteously angry as well. We know that he was upset by the money changers in the temple, right? We know that. He flipped over tables. He called them a den of robbers. You're making this a den of robbers. That type of thing. Did you know that Jesus was also angry at the graveside of his friend Lazarus? If we take a look at John 11, and we flip through that, we read that Jesus, just before the famous verse, Jesus wept, we see that Jesus was deeply moved, it says in the NIV, that he was deeply moved. That sort of says it right. But the original language, the Greek, calls for that Jesus was indignant. Indignant. He was angered. He was upset. He was mad. Now, was he mad at Lazarus? No. No. Because as Jesus is standing there by the graveside, as so many of us have done, especially in the last little while, and he's standing at the graveside, and he's looking at the people as they are mourning. And he's going, this is not the way it's supposed to be. This is not the way God made us. God made people to live. God made people to live out a full life all the time. There's no, in God's plan, there's no death at all. But people are so helpless, they're so hopeless. Look at them. Jesus was mad at sin. He was mad at sin. And we can simulate that too. Because because having a righteous anger stems from looking at things through God's lens, you see. Not our lens. And so when we look at the recent death of Lexi Brown, this young girl, you go, man, and we try to come up with answers, we can become quite angry and righteously angry at this. How did we get to this place where we are now? Why are we here? Why are young people taking their own lives? We shake our heads, and our anger may cause us to do something about it. That's the idea behind it. Or we can be angry, say, for instance, at how our society has trying to hide the deaths of thousands of young children under the shroud of women's reproductive rights. We are killing kids because men and women can't possibly be responsible for their actions. Really? You see how we can be righteously angry? We got to fight this. It causes you to get your ire up, to get going, to do something about it. We empathize with God. We see how he sees the world. And from our anger, we are inspired to act towards his justice because it's about him. The sin of wrath, the sin of anger is different. It's from a me perspective. How I've been wronged, how I've been inconvenienced, how I've been treated. And this attitude, folks, we need to check it regularly because it can lead us to do a great deal of awful things that we wouldn't normally do, like beat up on our best friend. That was Balaam's buddy, the donkey. And I think back on my life, I've done some pretty stupid things, guys. Some pretty stupid things. Even shameful things that I will never repeat to anyone. In fact, I'm really surprised in some way that I'm even here talking to you today. The attitude of anger entices us to lash out when what we need is to see the greater picture to see God's from God's viewpoint. So instead of acting out, we have to, you know what? Counting to 10 is a really good idea when you get angry. We need patience in the face of wrath. Patience, because patience is one of the fruit of the Spirit. If you have the Spirit in you, then you're going to have patience. We need to slow down. We need to take that deep breath. We need to take it to God. And we need to be reminded that there's more at play here than what we can see if we're inconvenienced somehow. And this takes practice. This takes practice. Our angered reactions are often like right now. And we got to get there before that snap of the finger. We have to act before we even, or we have to think before we act. Before that attitude kicks in. We got to focus all of our lives, on God. And that is our goal anyway as Christians, isn't it? Amen.